Welcome to the Money Tree Real Estate Investor Podcast, where we learn from real estate professionals across the industry. They will share about how they got into real estate, the big wins they have celebrated, the mistakes they have made along the way, and the advice they have for anyone following in their footsteps. Money really does grow on trees.
Hey everybody, William here. I've got a really good guest today. His name is also William. He goes by his last name of Hollis. I'll let him kind of introduce himself and give us a little bit of his background now.
Awesome, man. William, thanks for having me on. Like you said, I go by Hollis. I go by my last name. The reason for that is I'm actually from Hollis, Queens, New York. Grew up right off of Hollis Avenue. And, growing up there, my family, we rented our house for all of my childhood. And I remember all the way back to when I was like 7 years old, seeing my landlord come by every first of the month collecting, back in the 90s, collecting the rent in cash. And Mr. Carter was his name. He had the fattest wallet of anybody I've ever seen. By the end of the day, on the first of the month, his wallet was literally overflowing with $100 bills. So from a really young age, I always knew Mr. Carter had it figured out because he owned real estate. But growing up just in that neighborhood and kind of in my life situation, I never saw a bridge, how to actually begin to acquire properties and, grow my wealth through real estate. And that all changed for me. Back in, I think it was 2016 or 2017, a buddy of mine took me to a real estate conference, introduced me to wholesaling real estate. I did that for a little while and just kind of have grown from there and really fell in love with commercial real estate and helping others to invest in real estate passively and all the benefits that come with that. And now I've launched my firm, 24 Capital Group, and we're helping others to grow their wealth as well.
It's awesome. So you got a little bit of motivation. You saw Mr. Carter with stacks on stacks on stacks. And so one of the topics that we want to talk about today is why real estate is good for passive investors. So, how has real estate changed your life and what are some of the stories from other people that you've seen so far?
Yeah, 100%. So it's interesting. I was just talking to a guy yesterday, a CPA, who's going to actually hopefully be helping me get my house in order, so to speak, as things kind of grow here with the company. But he was just going over a lot of those benefits from the tax perspective. The fact that, real estate, when you invest in real estate, the IRS considers it passive income anyway. So even if you're a landlord, and being a landlord for anyone who's actually done it, it's not passive at all. But the IRS thinks it's passive, right? So they're going to tax you as if it's passive. So why not work with the tax code and actually invest in real estate passively so that you're not being taxed as a passive person when you're actively working as a landlord? So the benefits of that being that those passive cash flows benefit from depreciation. So oftentimes you can, write off that whole amount and avoid those taxes. And if you're active enough in the real estate field, you can even qualify for what's it called, the active real estate professional status. And then you can begin to offset some other active incomes through your real estate investing. So the tax benefits there are huge, not to mention the fact that you get to own hard assets, right? That have intrinsic value, which is not something that you can say for some of the other investment vehicles. So to put that in perspective, imagine if, whatever tax bracket someone's in, let's say you're in a 20% tax bracket and your cash flow, you're getting taxed at 20%. Let's say it's $100,000. That's $20,000 a year that's just being wiped off the table every year, right? What could you do with an extra $20,000 every year? Plenty. Imagine if you invested that $20,000 extra every year, and then next year it was now more than $20,000 extra, right? Because you invested it and that money grew through your cash flows in real estate. So real estate can be a really, really powerful tool. And it's obviously something I'm very, very passionate about. And I could run on this tangent probably all day.
Yeah, that's awesome. I studied engineering, as we talked about, and, there's a lot of math equations. There's a lot of like curves, and the real estate curve, if you invest, it might start out like this, but pretty quickly, it starts going like this, and then, it shoots off the page, So if given enough time, investing in real estate can, have extreme wealth, you know? And so that's another question I'd like to ask is, you know, what is your motivation for being in real estate? You know, for me, like, I want to be able to have enough to provide for myself. I want to retire earlier, you know, and you know, follow more of my passions of just talking to people and having these connections and building my network, you know? So what's your motivation?
Yeah, for sure. So, honestly, like most things in my life, started when I was a kid. My mom actually had a pretty high-paying job at the time me and my brother, my sister were born, and she actually stopped working so she could be at home with the kids, and really, you know, be a part of our lives, picking us up from school every day, going to the, you know, all the events that come along with having children and helping with the homework and all those sorts of things. So. That's really a very important value to me. You know, both parents just really having the opportunity to be involved in a child's life. So my son, right now he's 10 months old, almost exactly.
Wow,
10
that's
months
awesome,
and
man.
2 days.
That's exciting.
So yeah, it's definitely a really exciting time. And so for me, it's really about growing that passive income factor. To the point where, you know, hopefully I can retire my wife, or maybe I retire myself. It depends on who has the better health care, to be honest.
There you go. There you
But
go.
yeah, that's really my goal, and a major driver for me is that time freedom to really, really be able to provide my family with the attention that they need to really thrive.
Yeah, no, that's so awesome. And I think it's very doable, you know, and I don't think that it's gonna take a whole lot of time, you know, with the right partners, the right investments. Man, I think for both of us, like, it could happen, you know, in the near future.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And the really, you can see the breakdown. You know, if you, like you talk about on a curve, right? If you think about the average, say real estate syndication investment, you put in, we'll call it $50,000, and you're on, let's say you get a 2x equity multiple. So within 5 years, your 50,000 will be 100,000. If you invest 50,000 every year, in 5 years you'll have basically $100,000 cash flow every year just from investing, kind of on the same cycle, right? So, and there's some obviously other levers and things like that that you can pull to maybe expedite that process and increase those numbers. But to your point, it doesn't need to be, you know, a 30-year plan to get it done.
Exactly, you know, and something else, another benefit of buying real estate is the leverage, you know, and we haven't really touched on that too much, but you know, I can take my 50,000 and I can put that down and purchase something that may be $250,000, you know. So with a syndication, when you're doing that over a grand scale, you know, you could raise $7 million and purchase something that might be almost $20 million, you know. And so, like, I bought a house last year, you know, and I leveraged to the maximum that I felt comfortable with. You know, I wasn't going to over leverage and spread myself too thin, but I wanted to get in the nicest neighborhood that I could possibly afford, because this property is hopefully going to appreciate more, you know, than something that was cheaper, you know.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And to your point, looking at maybe say residential property versus a commercial property, right? The beauty of it really to me is in that economy of scale, because you know, let's say you put down your 50,000 and you get a single family house for 250,000. The problem with that is your vacancy risk is 100%, right? As soon as no one's living in that house, your income stream is completely shut off. Now, if you leverage that 50,000 and you invest it into a commercial deal, maybe through a syndication or a fund or whatever, maybe portfolio, whatever the case may be, however many units are in that deal is your vacancy risk percentage, right? So if you invest in a 50 unit property, one person moves out, okay, well, you still have 49 units left to go. You know what I mean? So your 50,000 is in combination with the leverage, is a lot more protected in that commercial space.
Exactly. There's risk involved in any investment, whether you're investing in the stock market, cryptocurrency, which I would say is probably even more volatile than the stock market. I don't know these days. It seems like the stock market's having some trouble. But it's about understanding risk. Like, risk is not a bad thing. Debt can be very bad. Credit card debt, where it's not used to get income, can be terrible. That could really have harsh consequences, but debt in and of itself is not a bad thing. And if you understand the risk, you find the right operators, the operators can help mitigate some of that risk. The market can help mitigate some of that risk. Like, these things can be calculated, and you're never going to remove all the risk, but we've seen tons of stories, and I think our story is going to, Lord willing, be like one of, the success stories as well. It's like, I like risk. Like, if I could go borrow $100 million today, I would. I can't yet, but hopefully I can someday, you know?
Yeah, 100%. It's all about taking the right risks, right?
Definitely. So another topic that we wanted to discuss today is alignment of interest between the limited partners. So those people who have no role in management, acquisition, building those relationships. They are truly just passive investors. And then the sponsors, the general partners, the team that's going to find the properties, they're going to do the underwriting, they're going to do the due diligence, they're going to help with renovations if it's a value add deal.
Passive investors in real estate are able to receive a check every month. Some people call that mailbox money. We say money really does grow on trees. Visit the website at biggerpictureholdings.com, where we have a ton of free resources to help you learn more about planting your very own money tree.
So how can we align interests between those two parties?
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question. And it's interesting because in our minds, maybe we picture these as kind of two separate sides, and they could get to a point where they're playing tug of war, right? Because the passive investors, well, they're counting on the general partners to be able to grow the worth of the building at a rate according to the business plan, so that they can get take advantage of those cash flows, whereas the general partners, maybe they feel like, well, we need to grow this really fast and sell, because that's really where we're going to get the most of our profits from as a general partner, right? Is at the sale of the building. And so it could be, we may feel like it's a little bit of a tug of war, both sides are kind of pulling in opposite directions, but that doesn't necessarily need to be the case. And there are really specific things that can be done that we really want to look for if you're a passive investor. To make sure that the general partnership's interests will be aligned with the limited partnership. And a lot of that does come down to deal structure, right? How is the deal structured? What's the waterfall split when we talk about, is there a preferred return? After the preferred return hurdle, how much of the money is going to go to the general partnership? How much of that money is going to go to the limited partners? What are the fees, right? Is it a very fee-heavy structure? Is there, the asset management fee super high? Is the acquisition fee really disproportionate? Are there disposition fees, refinance fees? I mean, because upfront fees are how the general partnership gets paid, right? And if you find a partnership that's charging really, really heavy fees, that could be an indication of misalignment, because they're trying to collect basically all their money upfront. And maybe they're not so worried about the property after that, right? Maybe they're kind of on a turn and burn model, or a transactional model, you could say, where they're just trying to complete transactions, collect fees, and that's how they plan to make their income. And maybe that could misalign their interests with those of their passive investors. So there's a lot of factors, and also obviously co-investing, right? Everybody always talks about having skin in the game, and while maybe having skin in the game is not the end all be all, right? Just because someone puts their $50,000 in the deal along with yours doesn't mean that their interests are necessarily aligned, especially if it's a general partner putting in that money, because the way they get paid is different from the way that you get paid as a passive investor. But it is at least a show of good faith in many cases, right? To have some investment in the deal alongside your investors. And it always makes people feel good to know that the people, making the offering are also invest in the deal. So those are just some things you want to look out for when it comes to making sure, you know, the interests are aligned. Look at the structure of the deal, look at the fee structure. You know, again, heavy fees up front could misalign the interest of the general partnership with the limited partners. And another thing you want to keep in mind is transparency, right? If you're asking questions as a limited partner, you have the right to ask questions. You put your money in the deal, you can ask as many questions as you want, right? But if you're asking questions and you're getting really vague answers, or you're, you know, you're looking for consistent reporting and the reports are not really coming in when they're supposed to, or they come in and they're just not offering a lot of detail, that could be an indication that there's a misalignment of interest, or maybe things are not going according to plan and the general partnership is not reporting that, right? Because it's their duty to report that to the limited partner. So definitely some things you want to look out for when you're trying to make sure that the interest of both of all parties are aligned.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that's something I would say is very important to think about. You know, like in business, I talk to a lot of people. I talk to operators like yourself. I talk to capital raisers. I talk to brokers, lenders, passive investors, you know, people, you know, really hustling and grinding. And, you know, there's been people that I love to talk to. I like them. I like them as a person. Like, I would want to do business with them. I put people through that filter. Do I want to do business with this person? You know, even if they're my friend, it's like, you know, would I want to do business with this person? Yeah. And, you know, there's people that I've talked to. It's like, man, like I get off the phone and like, they're passionate and they're excited, you know? And it's like, oh, we made plans to like go get lunch or this and that. And, you know, it's just like, I sit there and I'm like, man, like, this is the type of person that's going to get me in a lot of trouble. You know, they're going to have me going places I don't need to go, or doing things that I don't need to do, or there's a blurry line between, you know, what's right and what's wrong. And, you know, I'm a person of faith, and like, I don't want to be around people like that. Like, I don't want to be around people that are going to get me in trouble. You know, like, we're playing with, you know, potentially millions of dollars at this point. And, you know, you make a mistake, it's like, man, like, that could have dire consequences, you know? So I think it's the same way with passive investors vetting out, you know, somebody. It does, even if the deal is great, like even if you're going to make a ton of money, like, hey, there's hundreds, if not thousands of deals going on all the time around the nation, you know? And it's like, if I don't like that person, like, I don't care how much money I might make, like, you know, I'm not going to risk that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think you bring out a really, really important point. And it that kind of sums up the topic of alignment of interest. People often wonder, OK, I make this investment. This is a private placement. You know, this is me investing with William. How do I know William is not going to go buy an island with my money? And how do I know his interests are truly 100% aligned? The fact is, you can't. Right. William could put more money than you into the deal. He has access to the bank account. He can still run off with it. He can charge you no fees up front. And, you know, oh man, this looks great. Interest must be aligned. And he can still, you know, mishandle the business plan. The biggest factor at the end of the day when it comes down to alignment of interest is making sure you're investing with a person of integrity, right? Because that's going to avoid all the other issues. That means when there's an issue, when it comes to the property or the deal, and it comes time to report it, if they're a person of integrity, you're going to make the phone call. Even if it's a bad news, or one of those bad news calls, right? You're going to make the call. When it comes to your fee structure and waterfall split, if you're a person of integrity, knowing that you're a steward of this other person's money and they're entrusting you with you, you know, you're going to make the splits fair, or at least, you know, find the market rate and not try to push beyond that. So to your point, when you're doing due diligence as a passive investor, which is so important, just because it's called passive investing, don't skip the due diligence part, right? really, really, not only vet, you don't want to just vet the deal, you want to vet the sponsor and make sure that it's someone who you actually legitimately feel like you can trust. And that's that integrity of the sponsor at the end of the day is going to be the biggest point when you're talking about alignment of interest.
Exactly. And to kind of wrap things up, we want to talk about big wins that you've experienced and losses. So you shared a story earlier about a big loss, and we kind of hinted around that just now, but I'd like to just have you share a little bit more about somebody that got scammed in real estate, and let's talk about that a little more.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, I was recently had a phone call with a potential investor. This is actually a personal friend of mine, somebody a coworker I've known for many, many years. And I'm walking her through the deal, the specifics of the portfolio, business plan, and all these things. And as she's asking me questions, I can tell she's, really interested, but there's kind of some inhibition or something holding her back there. And she tells me, I just want to be really, really careful and vet all the people in the deal because a few years ago I got scammed. Apparently, I'm not sure if it was a syndication or all the details around it. She didn't mention any names to me specifically, but apparently she invested in a real estate deal and the operator actually took her money and disappeared and, didn't give her, she never just never heard from him again. Never, that money was gone, it was lost. Right. And
Hear
apparently
that?
this was also it was also somebody who had a bit who had some kind of track record, because she mentioned she did do a little bit of research on him beforehand. And he just, like we mentioned, turned out to not be a person of integrity. And like you said, those were that results in catastrophic loss. I mean, when we talk about a commercial property, yeah, okay, we're talking about maybe several million dollars, right? But when you come down to the individual investor, even if you invest, oftentimes the minimums are like $25,000, $50,000. And maybe in comparison to the total price of the property, that's not a lot. But for one person, I can tell you for me, if I lose $25,000, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's really serious. So, talking about a big loss, man, the biggest thing I recommend for people to do to try to avoid something like that is have a process, right? Have a due diligence process where you not only vet the deal, but have a process for vetting the sponsor. And something I recommend for her to do is get third-party verification. You can find just about anything on the internet. Go back in the internet, find this person's deals, find, maybe some partners on the deal, call their attorney, call their CPA, get third-party verification about the person who you're dealing with. And that can potentially help you to avoid us tragic situation like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think of a few other, measures that can be taken, while this is a private placement, it still has regulation by the SEC, and so something that can be done is like, hey, like you can report these things to the SEC, and if you've gotten scammed, if you've lost money in real estate, like I would highly encourage you to report that to the SEC,
Absolutely.
and not only look out for yourself, like, they can help you out. But I would say, like, look out for other people as well. This investing, real estate, life in general, like, it's not all about me. Like, I want to help myself and I want to grow over time, but I also want to have other people's best interest in mind, and so the SEC is they're on your side, as a passive investor and as a general partner. I mean, we don't like regulation, but it's there for a reason.
100%, 100%.
Definitely, man. Well, hey, last thing is like, tell us some of the big wins that you've had, maybe in the last year. I know you went to a conference recently, Rob Beardsley, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That was a fantastic conference. I would say one of the biggest wins I had was joining a mastermind group and getting to talk to people like you and Rob actually, and some of the awesome connections that I've been able to make through that and really been able to grow my investment portfolio and the types of offerings that I've been able to offer to others. I'm actually closing on a project right now. We're finishing. I don't usually flip houses, but this one kind of fell into my lap, and it came through, through networking. And we have a private investor on that deal as well, and he's actually, depending on the sales price, he's actually looking at somewhere between a 70 and 110% ROI on this project in about 4 months' time. So, definitely through networking, you find the best opportunities and you create the biggest wins.
It's awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. Love getting to know you better, and hope that and the listeners enjoy it as well.
Awesome, man. Really appreciate you having me.
Like and subscribe below. A new episode will air every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Are you looking for more content? Visit our website, biggerpictureholdings.com. And remember, money really does grow on trees.